I am no celebrity. People mistake me for a celebrity. I break people's faces for money and bounce. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. And get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John Franklin, I'm well. If the background doesn't look like my normal background, that's because I'm in a nondescript hotel room. I'm back, baby. I'm traveling. I can't wait. You look like you've got maybe a sugar-free Red Bull. I can't really see it. You're very small on my screen. But listen, I travel well. I wear the baseball jersey wherever I go. I said I've got some props. Listen, I don't know if there's people out there that watch the Stanley Cup Finals. Unfortunately, your Montreal Canadiens were unsuccessful in the finals, but out of the broadcast, we learned that Elliot Friedman likes to drink a lot of water, and he said that his wife might make fun of him. John, I made two great purchases while I've been here for the week. The first purchase, I'm almost like Carrot Top. I'm a prop comic. They just introduced at our theaters here what they call a Mighty Pop Go, and I'm the type that when I travel, I like to treat myself a little bit. So if I know I'm going to be here, I skip the dishes, and I order from the theaters a large bag of popcorn. It might take me one night. It might take me two nights. John Franklin, audience of Fight Night Picks. Mighty Pop Go is five bags of large popcorn all together, and I'm halfway through this bad boy. I've got one night left. I've also got a 4 liter of water. So listen, John, let's get into it. I'm excited. I'm well fed. Not really. I'm hydrated up. I'm ready to go. I'm excited.
I will see your movie theater story and raise you a movie theater story this week, and it may make its way into the podcast this week. This week, I saw the original Top Gun in the theaters. I've done it before. The movie holds up. I'm waiting forever for the sequel to come out. It was a lot of fun. I had a blast. I wore that hat. I wore some aviators. Where are the aviators at? Here are the aviators. I wore the aviators. I wore a white shirt like Pete Mitchell wears in that movie. It was a good time. Today, I went to a water park with my son. If my face looks weather-beaten, that's why. And the Phoenix Suns are playing now in game 2 of the NBA Finals. They won the first one. Last I checked, they were winning this one. So we'll see. But we begin, Craig, with the big fight this week. It's Conor and Poirier for the third time. They each have a victory. They are exchanging unpleasantries. There are, of course, extra things swirling around this fight, as there always are with a Conor fight. Will a loss here mean the end for McGregor? Poirier has the training, sparring video he's dealing with. The UFC, of course, is pulling out all the stops. I saw an ad for UFC bars on social media. I haven't seen UFC bars telling you where you can watch the fight in forever. They are doing a viewing party at the MGM Grand. They are trying to squeeze every penny out of this they can. Craig, how are you feeling about this fight and all that surrounds it?
I absolutely love it. You have to check out our fight companion at Fight Night Picks. You have to watch all of our previews, all of our predictions. You have to watch the post-fight show with John Franklin and Matt Allen. You have to watch 15-minute card breaks with Craig Allen and Matt Allen. We've got some Topps Heritage this week that we're going to be opening. No. Listen, I can sell out just like they can, right? But if I go down through on my YouTube app right here, you can see where I'm following T-Bone MMA. But if I go down through this, it's just UFC 264 after UFC 264. It's every single channel that I follow. Everybody's excited about this one. I know a friend of the show, fellow podcaster, you might know him out there, but Marcus Deegan here. He's all ready. He's so excited. You're Conor McGregor impersonator, but even Conor was giving him a shout out. I don't know if you saw that on Instagram, saying that he's been paying attention to his podcast and he's going to be on sometime soon. So good job for Marcus. But overall, lots of excitement about it. Did I really like the whole face-off stare-down thing that they did today where Conor kind of threw a little bit of a front kick at Dustin Poirier? I'm not about that, but I am excited for this one. The one thing about the whole big fight feel, and we kind of covered this in the previews and predictions, but I really want to get your thought more so on this than anything else, is the fact that Dustin Poirier never leaves camp. I mean, even if he goes to Louisiana, he's still going to be training with some of the bigger, better fighters out there. I mean, a guy, fellow Louisiana guy here recently just had a big fight announced to Matt Schnell. He's going to be taking on Alex Perez at 125 pounds. So that just kind of gives you an idea of the guys that Poirier surrounds himself at, not just at American Top Team, but elsewhere. Poirier's always training with the best. Conor McGregor has been in California getting ready for this one. So really, when we talk about Conor McGregor reinventing himself, the old Conor, the guy that's going to come out here for the knockout, and some of those controversial statements that we saw him throw out there this week, you know, I've only lost X amount of fights, because it's just the knockouts that count, right? So I haven't heard the right things that I want to hear out of Conor McGregor this week. Couple that with the fact that he leaves a restaurant there, and this is another one of those things that I saw on social media this week. He leaves a restaurant. There must have been thousands of people there. And he goes out in the street and he kind of throws a couple of jabs and then he hops in a car. Why were there like 8 or 10 cops there pushing people back? Did Conor McGregor tip them off that Conor McGregor is eating at a restaurant in California? It just, everything seemed really weird to me. You can't deny that a Conor McGregor fight week is a huge thing, but it's just been a really weird one. Hopefully he pulls off a great performance. I think that would mean a lot to the sport. But I just haven't really liked what I've seen so far.
Yeah, Conor's unique in the sense that, I mean, he's the biggest star we've ever had. He's, you know, he's like Floyd Mayweather in terms of his prestige and his fame and his money. But he's not like Floyd Mayweather in the sense that Floyd always finds a way. And Conor doesn't always find a way. And I think that we can't always tell. Conor's more like Mike Tyson in the sense that you can't always tell in the pre-fight, at least later in Tyson's career, what you were going to get from him. Sometimes he would seem super focused in the pre-fight and then lose and tell you his back's broken or some crazy shit like that. So I just don't know how to read him anymore. I don't even want to try. I think that, you know, Conor, we're at the point with Conor now where it's all results-based. If he goes in there and does well, we move forward in that way. If he goes in there and does poorly, we move forward in that way. Conor will, you know, I said in the intro, does this mean the end for him? And obviously I'll throw that question to you after I answer it myself. But I think that I don't know what the end is for Conor because, you know, I mean, he always has the Nate fight. Obviously he could have a George Masvidal fight anytime he wanted. He could always move up to 70. And then, you know, Conor's version of Dancing with the Stars is fighting Jake Paul. So he could always do, that's always going to be available to him. 5 years from now, he could fight Jake Paul. You know, I'll say that. 5 years from now, he can fight Nate Diaz. 10 years from now, he can fight Jake Paul. So, you know, I mean, he's always going to have options. And he's a guy that doesn't even need options because he's rich. So I think that that is what it always remains to be seen with Conor. I will not try to read anything from Fight Week any longer. Just, you know, because we had some questions about Cerrone. Before the Cerrone fight, how Conor was conducting himself. So, who the hell knows? I mean, obviously Dustin Poirier is not Donald Cerrone, but what are your thoughts? Do you kind of agree with me that he's always going to have options, or do you think that a loss here is bad for him?
No, I mean, he's always going to have options, but it's funny because when we talk about the money and the fame and obviously the big quote that's out there, and you kind of said it from the top, but the fame's not the be-all end-all for him. It's all about the results. And I mean, the last time that he won at lightweight was back in November 2016, so it has been a while. And then when you talk about the money and the fame, yeah, he made, what was it, $100 million for fighting Floyd Mayweather. But the exact figure when he and his partner sold out a Proper 12 Irish whiskey was $600 million when they sold out there. And I mean, yeah, now he owns the Black Forge Inn, so he has an extra added bit of income. I mean, there's so much money at stake for him outside of fighting. Why would you risk future career prospects outside of fighting, by fighting? But even if he decides to fight, like you said, in one of those showcase boxing matches, I know there's, you know, a couple of things that we're going to talk about later on in the show. But if you look at it for Ben Askren, didn't really have the greatest career trajectory in terms of MMA when he went into his fight with Jake Paul. There's some other fighters going into these celebrity boxing matches that, hey, don't have any, you know, experience, maybe boxing talent, or they had salty records coming into these events. Conor McGregor is one of those guys where the star kind of trumps everything. So I don't think a loss here totally kills his career, but in terms of building himself back up in the lightweight division, adding to his legacy, I mean, this is going to be huge there. And I know Dana White threw it out there. If Conor McGregor wins this fight, if he's able to win his belt again, he cements himself as one of the greatest fighters of all time. I think he's on that list by virtue of how big of a celebrity he is and how much he means to the sport, how big of a plateau he grew it to. Like, you really can't deny what the guy did. Love him or hate him. Like, I'm not a Conor McGregor fan. I never was. But you definitely have to respect what the guy's done. So I don't think one singular loss or, you know, a second consecutive loss to Dustin Poirier kind of dulls that star, but it definitely does something to a lot of those hardcore fans.
Yeah. Conor knows how to make money in ways that other people don't, you know, like with the whiskey and with all these business ventures, he's smart in that way. I don't think that he could be Dwayne Johnson, but I think he'll be a lot closer to Dwayne Johnson than he would be to like Ronda Rousey or John Cena. Like, I think that he could be like, not top billed Hollywood guy, but he could be like in a movie with The Rock or in a movie with somebody and be like a second banana. I think he's talented. He's a smart guy. He's got the look. So I think there's a way to, I could see Conor like in a Guy Ritchie film to start out and then from there kind of exploding.
I mean, Ronda Rousey was in the Fast and the Furious. So, yeah, if she can do that, then Conor can do anything. John,
sure was.
Let's switch topics. And in January, USADA, they decreed that it was cool with fighters ripping that sticky icky, that classic Ricky Williams dank herb. And now, finally, the Nevada State Athletic Commission. They're on the same trajectory. However, previous convictions or offenses will remain. And oddly enough, they announced this on this Wednesday. So, we're July 8th as we record. So yesterday, two Canadian fighters actually tested positive for marijuana, and they were given sentences due to these prior offenses that dated back to March. That's Misha Serkinov and Jillian Robertson, each suspended. So, John, where does this kind of fall in terms of a major accomplishment scale, just this decision by the Nevada State Athletic Commission to kind of carry forward what USADA had already said?
Well, I think it was smart of them because didn't California already do it? So if California did it and there's that proximity with the Vegas – then you would realize if you're Vegas, you might start losing big fights like this weekend, or like, you know, if you're not on, you know, if you're playing second banana too, because no, the last thing you want if you're Dana White is to lose a big fight for somebody popping for marijuana. Now, the way that they should spin this, if they were smart, and the mistake the NFL made with Ricky Williams is that they should have done, listen, we got a lot of guys, they go in there, they're warriors, they have pain. And this is there's a medicinal purpose for this as well. So I think that if you said, listen, I think the why people tend to steer away from the marijuana subject is because they think it's just people getting high, want to get stoned. And I think there may be that, but that's not something you got to focus on. Can't be like, hey, guys, like the athletes like to get stoned, and it's cool now. We're fine with it. No, say these guys are taking this for recovery. They're taking it, and it doesn't enhance their performance. It only, you know, kind of, you know, dulls the pain. Same as alcohol would, and it's less, you know, there's less negative impact on their life as, you know, alcohol can have. I think that's the play. But, I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, when you talk about is this a major accomplishment, I think it was an inevitability. So I think that they had to do it. So I wouldn't call it a major accomplishment, but it was something that in the grand scheme of things matters.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't have a whole lot more to add. You know, Matt and I kind of talk about it, and it's funny, like whether it's the recap show or whether it's this show or whatever we're talking about, you know, we got a fight coming up this week. It's Nico Price, and he's taking on Michel Pereira, and both guys have 2-0 contests. That's pretty weird, right? But for Nico Price, it's because he likes to kind of smoke dope every now and again. And can you hold it against him? Maybe. I mean, it's unfortunate that he has those two kind of convictions on his record, but if you really think about it, does it affect his performance? I don't have the statistics in front of me that say that marijuana is a huge performance enhancer. I know in terms of the Olympics and track and field, apparently it definitely holds some bearing. But in MMA, it's a really tricky subject. But for me, you know, having the background of coming to Canada, it's been legal here for a couple of different or for a few years. You haven't seen many negative repercussions. Maybe in the next 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to learn quite a bit about it. But it definitely hasn't had any immediate major impact. So, you know, in the sporting world, I'm totally fine with it. You know, I'm not the one that's doing it. So how does it affect me? And I can't really see it negatively affecting these athletes' performance. I mean, yeah, Misha Serkinov lost his last fight to, who was it, Ryan Spann. And Jillian Robertson, unfortunately, lost hers too. But yeah, good. Now we move forward, and hopefully the other athletic commissions can adopt a similar stance on this too.
Yeah, and I think that what these athletes need to keep in mind is that, you know, there's no set, you're not grandfathered into anything. You're not there's no retroaction, meaning you have to deal with the law as it is when you violated it. For example, I don't know how Canada works, but in the U.S., this is going to really sound ignorant of me, but in the U.S. we have HOV lanes. obviously the HOV lanes have certain times. It's rush hour in the morning. So it's 6 through 9 in the morning.
It's a big city thing.
Right. At 4 to 7 in the afternoon, you can go in these separate lanes, right? So if it's noon, I'm legal to drive in it. If it's 6, I'm not legal to drive in it. I don't get to tell a cop, hey, if it were noon, I'd be fine. Although I will say this, one time I was in the HOV lane at like 9:03 and a cop pulled me over and I took supreme delight telling him what time it was. And he told me to have a good day in the shittiest way he could. And I told him to fuck off in the nicest way I could. So, but yeah, I think that if they're looking for like, a get back from the UFC or from the Nevada State Athletic Commission or anybody, they need to just forget about that. And we move on. Bobby Axelrod time. Watch Billions. I'm binging it right now. It's a great show. Craig, a report from our from friend of the show, Mike Heck. UFC has signed a $175 million deal with Crypto.com. I'll read Mike Heck's report. On Wednesday, the promotion announced they'll be partnering with Crypto.com on a long-term basis where the cryptocurrency site, the first of its kind to partner with the UFC, will have their branding on athletes' fight kits in competition, as well as the corners for the fighters. Sportico is reporting that the partnership is a 10-year deal for $175 million. The new fight kits are set to be revealed at Saturday's UFC 264 event, smart move by Crypto.com, which will be headlined by, obviously, we talked about before, Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. So I will not get into a conversation with you about crypto because I don't know shit about it.
Neither do I.
I will ask you, do you think it's wise of the UFC to sort of broaden their horizons and take in partners that they do not traditionally? I mean, listen, they took on Dude Wipes. How bad could Crypto.com be? What are your thoughts on this deal?
I mean, yeah, where does it fall on the line of like Trojan condoms and corn nuts? It's pretty difficult to say. But the one thing I want to say, and so I was reading through this, and I'm just going to read you a quick excerpt, but the multi-year agreement will give Crypto.com brand presence, like you said, on fight kit items used throughout UFC, including apparel, shorts, top bras, walkout hoodies worn by athletes during competition, training staff. In addition, they will own the rights to UFC's newly created cryptocurrency platform partner sponsorship category. Okay, let that sink in for a second. That's great. It's going to be everywhere. You're going to see it on the mats. You're going to see it on the corners. You're going to see it on the jerseys. But how much money did the fighters get, John? And Dana White said this week, like in terms of fighter pay, and this is all paraphrasing, that nobody's really speaking up, and it's not a big deal. It's just the media. The media is just driving this. It's just the media. But when I look at this, it seems like almost like a monster deal where Monster's the official sponsor, and if a fighter can go out of their way to work a brand deal with Monster, they're going to get paid by them, like the Dominic Cruz, Donald Cerrone, whoever some of the bigger fighters are. But it's a similar idea with Crypto.com. You're going to have to work out your own deal if you want to get paid by it. So it's kind of an awkward one because, like, I had this conversation with a guy the other day. I just went and got a Milwaukee set, like a drill and an impact gun set. And I was pretty excited about it. Like, I've never owned Milwaukee before. We were always Rigid from Home Depot, but I got Milwaukee. And my buddy was like, oh, I got DeWalt. And I said, oh, were you a big Matt Kenseth fan when you were a kid? And just, like, it didn't register with him at all. But if you think about it, like with NASCAR sponsorships, Matt Kenseth and his race team got paid by DeWalt for years and years and years out of that sponsorship. That was for them. And I get it. UFC is different than NASCAR. But if I'm a fighter walking around with crypto.com, I probably want to cut out of this compared to, 10 years ago, let's say before the Reebok deal, when I've got like Training Mask on my butt. Training Mask is the one that's paying to sponsor my shorts or Dude Wipes or whoever that those fighters can broker deal with to get the sponsorship. So yeah, I know that the UFC did this on their own behalf, but it's unfortunate that there's probably fighters out of this that aren't going to be getting a cut of it.
Dude, not for nothing. How did Training Mask not go make a $500 million during the pandemic, for Christ's sakes. Real quick, let me read this quote from Dana. Partnership between two companies that are the best at what they do. No company has done more to grow the popularity of combat sports than UFC. And now we're one of the biggest sports brands on the planet. We can help Crypto.com reach more people around the world through the strength of our brand. Do you think that when you're Crypto.com, you're partnering with the UFC to get just like brand recognition and like eyes on your product, or do you think it's for the Dana White thumbs up and have to hit for him himself to co-sign on you and say, I believe in crypto?
No, I mean, what was the IPO that Dana White was at not that long ago? The Endeavor IPO? He's there for that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, that's kind of one of those, like, you know, employee-employer type relationships, if you want to call it that. But crypto.com is probably looking at it from a brand recognition perspective where, hey, now all of a sudden we're on ESPN. We're in front of a pay-per-view audience. This is really going to pop. You know, PFL already has some different deals like this. They've got their own, whatever, coin. They've got a deal with not tops, but they've got Upper Deck. So it's neat to see the UFC make these deals. It feels a little bit PFL-ish, if I'm being completely honest. But crypto is one of those markets that I'm sure somebody will throw it down below in the comment section how much I should be into it and how much I should be paying attention to it. But I don't know. I've got so much going on in my life. Crypto is not one of those things that I'm focusing on. I don't know about you, but that's how I feel. John, so I'm going to flip it over to something that you probably actually do care about. And it's been said that in some major news that somehow escaped us both, Rashad Evans is unretiring and he's looking to enter the Logan Paul sweepstakes, among other things. So really, you know, where we kind of have some different perspective, when Rashad Evans was a champ in the UFC, I was in like middle school. And you were long in the tooth in terms of following fights and covering fights, if I can be polite. But you definitely were there through the rise and fall of his career. He was an Ultimate Fighter OG. So I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts more so on his return to action. And that's it. To me, it's a little odd. So I'd like to hear this one from you.
You know, I don't really have a good read on who I think would be good in these celebrity boxing matches, because a lot of it comes down to, and I don't know if celebrity boxing is a way to put it, because there's a negative connotation with that. It seems like the circus fights, the big event fights, the YouTube guys, however you want to put it. I just think that Rashad Evans is, I don't know that he has the skill set. Does he have some hands? Sure. But I don't know that he has the skill set necessary to really shake up Logan Paul if Floyd Mayweather couldn't. Right? Now, the difference is that Rashad Evans is a little bit closer to Logan Paul's weight, so he might actually get an honest fight out of it, whereas there were so many rules and everything. You know, when Jake Paul goes in there, to his credit, we'll get to Jake in a second, but when Jake Paul goes in there, he's fighting. I mean, he's making the same weight as his opponent. They're swinging for the bleachers. We're going in there and there's real problems to be had. Logan Paul doesn't seem to be committed in the same way. Jake Paul is willing to take on anybody, anytime, whatever the case may be. Logan seems to have these sort of weird caveats and little conditions he likes to put on it. And listen, Floyd Mayweather is definitely a willing accomplice in that. He'll say, yeah, I don't want to go to judges either, because I just want to get in here with you, have my moments, make you look stupid, fuck around, and get some bank. So I think that I don't know. A lot of this comes down to how big the name is. Right. So is Rashad Evans a big enough name for Logan Paul coming off of Floyd Mayweather? I don't know. I think that Jake seems to be doing better. And again, we're going to get to Jake, but I think he seems to be doing better at like making his fights big fights. And like he can carry a lesser name more so than Logan can. Jake has probably surpassed Logan at this point in terms of like in ring, you know, juice.
Like Floyd is what, in his 40s. Rashad Evans is in his 40s. He's 41. He turns 42 in September. He went 2-7 in his last 9 fights in the UFC, and he lost 5 in a row. Bader, Glover, Daniel Kelly, Sam Alvey, and then he got knocked out by Anthony Smith at UFC 225, his last fight, and that was in 53 seconds at light heavyweight in 2018. So we haven't seen him in just over 3 years. It's a fight that I don't need to see. It's so weird. Like with Rashad Evans, he was one of those guys that he went on Joe Rogan. And again, paraphrasing, but he kind of talked about, what was it, the toad and DMT and how like loss of ego and I don't want to fight anymore. And it sounded just like what Mike Tyson said. And then all of a sudden, Mike Tyson's fighting Roy Jones Jr. And now we've got Rashad Evans back and fighting. So I don't know really what to think of it. I always liked Rashad Evans as a fighter. Like I said, let me see. He beat Forrest Griffin. That was in 2008. So in 2008, I was in grade 8. So I was all about MMA at that point in time. And I was the biggest John Jones fan ever. So that was a really exciting point for me. And it sucked that, you know, well, it sucked for him that he lost to Machida, but I like Machida too. So for me, it's just a weird one. Good for him if he can get the bag, as they say. But my interest level out of a 10, it's probably a 5. And then I'll probably still spend the $50 on the pay-per-view if I'm totally honest with myself.
Yeah, Evans is a weird case because he was teammates with John Jones. He fell out of a fight. Jones stepped in, which was the Shogun fight. Jones stepped in, took the belt. Or I think it might have been who did he take the belt off? Shogun or Machida? I think it was Shogun.
Machida.
So either way. So Jones takes the belt. Then there's some animosity between the two of them. So I think that Rashad Evans in our sport is a big deal. I just don't know if he has that thing. I don't know what they would attach him to. Like you can obviously just attach – people know Ben Askren from getting KO'd by Masvidal, and then you could play the sort of, well, yeah, he got knocked out by Masvidal, but he's a real fighter, and Jake Paul's not, and you play that card. I don't know what the play would be with Evans. And, you know, Chael said – and this is our first Chael reference. There'll be more to come. But Chael said – never call for a fight you can't get because it makes you look weak. And, you know, if you say it, you better damn sure know you can get it. And I don't know that Rashad can get this one. So I think that – but listen, if he can't and the people around him are saying, oh, man, you're as good as blah, 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 maybe this is just a Hail Mary.
I mean,
that's the case, then okay.
It's funny where the MMA history guy, the guy that did like a deep dive into the history of Lyoto Machida. No, Machida lost to Shogun. Shogun lost to John Jones. That's there a great episode. If you want to go back into the Fight Night Picks anthology.
But then Jones beat Machida, which is what threw me off. When Jones dropped him, I didn't know if that was for the belt, if Jones was defending it or winning it.
I got to say, like a tire pump to John Franklin. I actually really like that episode. That was a treat.
We need to bring those back. Yeah. All right, Craig. Let's move on from the lesser of two Pauls to the greater of two Pauls. They say that my enemy's enemy is my friend. And based on that, Tyron Woodley has begun training with Floyd Mayweather for his fight with Jake Paul. Paul, who may still have Mayweather's hat, seems unbothered by this. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think Tyron Woodley training with Floyd Mayweather is something or nothing?
I mean, like, I've got chopsticks on me. How crazy is that? It's weird. Is it a mind game? I don't know. I mean, Tyron Woodley is one of those interesting cases. I went back today and I threw it out there on Twitter. I was watching UFC 166. Can you tell me what the main event was from that one? Maybe you saw my Twitter feed.
No. What was the main event for UFC 166?
It was Velasquez JDS 3. But it was it's a great card. Like, it's so much fun to go back and watch it. And the reason why, I actually only went back for one fight and then I just kind of kept it on, was Nate Marquardt and Hector Lombard. Because I had this weird, like, Hector Lombard was bad in the UFC, and the UFC paid him a lot of money, so they had to just keep throwing him out there. There was a contract involved. But that fight was really good. And then you think about it, well, Hector Lombard's kind of like a Yoel Romero from Cuba, and the fact that he was, you know, an Olympian in judo. Kind of like Tyron Woodley was, you know, a Division I premier wrestler. But like Lombard developed his hands enough where he just knocked people senseless. I don't know how well that's going to translate into boxing, though. And Tyron Woodley's one of those guys, and they kind of set it all the way into the Luque fight until he really let his hands fly. He's the type of guy that's really reserved. He'll get behind the two black lines, and then when you kind of blitz in, that's when he's going to strike, he's going to pounce, and he's going to knock your lights out. Almost like a Josh Koscheck type in that knockout. So I don't know what training, you know, up around 40 with Floyd Mayweather is going to do for either guy, but I guess it's cool. It might sell some more tickets. It might generate some more impressions on the internet. I don't see what he's going to gain out of it, but I still think he's going to be able to win that fight.
And we move on.
All right, that's fair. That's all we've got on that one. It's just a shame. The celebrity boxing fights. You know what? Let's move into something that I'm real excited about. The legend of Fedor Emelianenko lives on. Bellator announced the Pride megastar is going to return to Moscow. This one's going to be October 23rd of this year in the promotion's debut in Russia. So, John, I got to ask you, because you're our resident Bellator prelim expert, is this the start of something good with two of his younger teammates in Moldavsky, who's the interim heavyweight champ? There's also Vadim Nemkov that's like the consensus greatest light heavyweight outside of the UFC as their light heavyweight champ. these guys are his teammates, his mentees, if you will. Is this going to be something good for that entire camp, that Alexander Nevsky, Starry Oskol, or is this going to be a short-lived foray going over to Russia, similar to what happened with Bellator's European series where, hey, this is going to be a huge thing. Everybody in Europe got really excited, and we haven't seen a Bellator European series in forever.
Yeah, I think that when you talk about stuff like this, it's like, are we trying to appease Fedor, or are we building something? I think that they see value in Fedor for a couple of more fights. Maybe they're building to something bigger, so they're going to throw him, you know, Jack Swagger or Fabricio Verdum in a rematch or whatever they're going to do. But that's where the value is for them. And if to do that, they have to appease him with his, you know, throwing some bones to his teammates. Sometimes there are what we call in life happy accidents. So yeah, if something came from his team as a result of this, and we got some kind of just amazing fighter or fights from that team, that would be a happy accident. But I don't think that's why Bellator's doing it. It's not like, oh, we get a Fedor fight. And also, we're getting into this this market. I think going into that market, based on what I know about the world a little bit, it's probably more of a headache than anything. So I'm sure they got to grease this palm or give this guy this, that, or the other. So I'm sure it's not no walk in the park. They'll go, hey, we're going to come to Russia. And they're like, great, good to have you. No, they're going to be like, yeah, okay, you want to come in here? This is what we need. So I'm sure Fedor and the Russian government allegedly could be working together to make this thing happen. And he doesn't want to leave. And it's a lot of, well, it's a lot of things. I'm not trying to cast any aspersions on Fedor. No, I'm just saying, I don't think that this is necessarily in Bellator's best interests. It's just a necessary evil for them.
Because he was a special advisor in terms of sports, right, to the government at one point. And, like, listen, I could give you a Canadian example. The same thing. Remember UFC 129? UFC 129 was the first card in Ontario. And they really had to sell it to the commission there, the boxing commission, that this would be a cool thing. And now, under normal circumstances, the UFC goes to Toronto, what, like twice a year? And they usually put on a huge pay-per-view in December. And they usually put one on near the end of the summer. Like, Toronto's a big spot for fight. Even in the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor, like the press conference tours, I told them we had to go to Canada, baby. Like, Dana, why are you doing this, man? Like, please just stop. You're embarrassing us. But I think it's neat. I think that these guys are starting to make a name for themselves in Nemkov and Moldavsky, more so Nemkov than Moldavsky. But you still got to consider there's plenty of great Russian fighters over Bellator. There's Magomed Magomedov. We've seen Umar Nurmagomedov, Habib's cousin. We've seen the Takov brothers. So there is plenty of talent out there. The other Nemkov's not very good, so don't bother watching him. He's kind of aged himself out. But I think it's going to be good. It's just going to be a matter of sustainability. We saw the UFC kind of make a little bit of a move in Russia, right? Like, I remember, who was it? It was Overeem versus Olenek was a main event. Wasn't there Overeem Mark Hunt? Was that over there? You had a few different, Volkov fought Greg Hardy in Russia. So there's been some UFC events over there in the last few years. And that was like a huge breakthrough thing. But it's one of those markets that you're going to have to keep going back over to, because it's not like M1 Global's a player there now. You still have ACA. There's definitely promotions. But for Bellator to make their mark, they have to do a better job of developing more talent in that region of the world. And I think they're on the right track. So I guess we'll just have to see how this one kicks off on the 23rd of October.
So according to you, it's interesting you bring that up, because I actually have a list of UFC events up on Wikipedia. And there were two events in Moscow. UFC Fight Night.
One was in St. Petersburg.
Hunt versus Olenek, Magomed Sharipov versus Cater.
Yep.
And then the other one was, you called it, St. Petersburg, which was Overeem versus Olenek.
So then where did Volkov fight Greg Hardy?
Oh, I have no idea. You're asking for too much, my friend. So we move on. To sparring sessions.
UFC Fight Night Moscow. That was the main event.
We are a mess this week. I'm gonna edit the sweet shit out of this thing. Okay. And we move on, Craig, to sparring sessions. Craig, this week, sparring sessions, we're talking Sean O'Malley. Listen, he said this week he's inspired by Connor, but not copying him. He's quoting Chael, which always, you know, gets props from us. He said, what does Chael say? Fight the worst guy on the highest spot on the card. So my question to you, we've asked this before. I guess this is more of an update than anything else. At this point, do you think Sean O'Malley is a pure-cut diamond, or do you think he's a cubic zirconia? Like, where are we at with this guy?
Wow. Like, I mean, to quote Ricky from Trailer Park Boys up here, which I'm not that far away from where they filmed it, if we're being totally honest with everybody, he's more like a cubic zirconia. It's one of those ones where we're really starting to kind of copy. We're kind of, you know, we're getting bone dry at this point. And I'm reading through the comments right now on the video that we did on the Chris Moutinho, Sean O'Malley fight. And I tried to be as honest, as transparent, as truthful, and throw as many props Chris Moutinho's way ahead of this fight. But the truth of the matter is Sean O'Malley's like a minus 900 favorite. It's not often that a favorite that big loses unless you're like PFL, Rory McDonald, Gleison Tibau. But like to read through some of these comments, while somebody quoted me because I said, if you're really in the corner of Chris Moutinho, then you're probably related to him. But listen, there's a lot of negativity around this fight right now. You're not pulling the wool over a lot of fight fans' eyes and giving Sean O'Malley, who's 13-1, a guy that's 9-4 in going into the UFC. That's not a great record. He's fought decent talent, but it's not a great record. His recent wins aren't over the highest level of guys. And you go back and watch the fight, you can tell they're not that good. So again, props to Chris Moutinho. He made it to the UFC. I'm never going to do that. And maybe he wins this weekend. But to flip that on its head, Sean O'Malley's one of those guys that likes to talk and talk and talk and talk. And if you're going to copy other guys and you're not really beating the highest level of competition, the unfortunate thing for him is he's going to start to get older. And then he's going to start to get into that Michael Venom page where, yeah, those knockouts over those lower level guys are great. But you really have to start fighting some big name opponents. I don't even know if Luis Smolka would have done that for him. So he's got a big fight coming up. I'm saying cubic zirconia, as Ricky would say right now. But listen, you got to show it to me, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, we said this about Connor earlier. So I guess you could say it about O'Malley as well. I think that, yeah, we get it, man. You put all a bunch of shit in your hair, you dress wild out. You got the glasses. You got the crazy podcast with Tim Welsh. I mean, you got some things moving, but it all comes down to what you can do in the cage and how and who you're beating. And I mean, a lot of
like that Thomas Almeida knockout was disgusting. Like Sean O'Malley looked great in that fight, but you got to start like it's. And I understand the UFC is going to coddle him a little bit, and they're going to hand feed him some opponents, but like, it's got to be some bigger wins. It's got to be some big, big wins.
It does. And again, back to something Chael said before was that, you know, you're at your peak when it doesn't matter if you win or lose. He's not there yet. He's not at the point where it doesn't matter if he wins or loses. You know, Connor kind of doesn't matter if he wins or loses. Diaz brothers, there are guys. I mean, obviously Connor's star shines much brighter when he wins than when he loses, but he still has options when he loses. This kid, I mean, he really needs to get, you know, when he's winning, it's top of the world. When he's not winning, no one really wants to put up with his gimmick. So I think that he needs to keep his head screwed on straight and focused on where it needs to be. All this other stuff needs to not get in the way. All right, Craig's feature time. I'm up. It's rank 'em.
It's International Fight Week performances, John. So you're going to rank them. I want what? You think five's fair? Is five fair for you? Does that work for you?
I got 10. Not only do I have 10, I'm going to go through them quick because this is for TikTok. I got 10. I texted you the 10 because I wanted to make sure that, you know, who can keep track of this stuff while someone's saying it. So I texted you the 10. I did a little bit of research. I'm going to go 10-1. Usually we go 1-10. I'm going to go 10-1. If you have not seen our TikToks, check them out. They're looking good. The first one was – first three were okay. The one last week with Craig was really good because when we edited it, we just put Craig in there. It looked like a legit TikTok. So it's probably what we're going to do with this one. Let's get started. Team me up.
John, I'm asking you, rank them. Best International Fight Week performances.
Number 10, Cain Velasquez KOing Travis Brown, UFC 200. Number 9, The aforementioned Thomas Almeida KOing Brad Pickett, flying knee, UFC 159, or 189, sorry. Number 8, Amanda Nunes KOing Holly Holm, UFC 239. Number 7, Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald 2, UFC 189. Number 6, Eddie Alvarez TKOing Rafael Dos Anjos, UFC Fight Night 90. Number 5, Jorge Masvidal KOing Ben Askren, UFC 239. Number 4, Amanda Nunes KOing Miesha Tate, UFC 200. Number 3, Conor McGregor KOing Chad Mendes, UFC 189. Number 2, Daniel Cormier KOing Stipe Miocic, UFC 226. And the number 1 performance on International Fight Week of all time, Chris Weidman knocking out Anderson Silva, UFC 162. There you have it. You got the list.
Boom.
How do you feel about it?
Number 1 should be Brock Lesnar beating the shit out of Mark Hunt.
It's a no contest.
I'm cool with it. I was so jazzed for that fight, and Brock Lesnar won it. I don't care what he was on.
I should have given some parameters, so I'll give you what the parameters, a little history on International Fight Week, and a personal story as we get out of the rank or the feature segment this week. The history is UFC 148, according to Dana White, was really the first International Fight Week. And obviously the last two, particularly last year, didn't really count. Like, there weren't International Fight Weeks. For me, International Fight Week is Fan Expo, you know, the Hall of Fame. That's the week when I would go to International Fight Week. It was, you come in town, you go to open workouts, you go to the Hall of Fame, you go to the press conference, you go to the fight. That's International Fight Week. You go to the, like, rehab pool on Sunday. That's International Fight Week. That's what it's all about to me. The best one ever, probably, just based on my list, UFC 189.
You just spent the whole week at the Bunny Ranch.
Yeah. UFC 189 was probably the best card, but that one that had, like, the Ultimate Fight Night with Eddie Alvarez and Dos Anjos, had the Ultimate Fighter finale, and then had UFC 200. That was probably them just really flexing. Like, we're going to do 3 cards, 3 straight nights. That was crazy, and had Jones and Cormier not falling through, probably would have been the biggest one ever. Here's my story. First time I ever went to International Fight Week, I went with a buddy of mine, and this was kind of our foray into podcasting and all that. 100 years ago, we go, and there's a like a radio row, which, not for nothing, and if you guys want to steal this idea, go ahead. If they ever bring back Fan Expo, Craig, we should get a booth.
We're doing College Game Day.
My plan. We get a booth and set up in our booth any podcast that wants to come. Just put all tables out, bring any podcast, come, put a big Fight Night Picks banner up there, and let all the Sound of Violence, Alex, everybody's got a damn podcast, Anakin, Florian. So that's the way they had it set up back in the day. It was like a Radio Row thing. So the fighters would come, and they would go from show to show to show to show. So when this all emptied out, John McCarthy needed something. I can't remember what he needed. Tripod or something from us. And we let him borrow that, and I said, yeah, sure, we'll let you borrow that. We can interview it. And that was my first interview, Big John McCarthy. Here I was covering a World Series of Fire, and I went over and I said, and literally gave me a lot of time. He gave me 20 minutes. And I went, thanks. I appreciate it. He was more than gracious. Good guy. And there you have it. All right, let's move on. This week in the socials for the grand, Van Zandt has reiterated that she is completely happy with her decision to leave the UFC. The killers are, she's with BFC, she has a new fan site, calls leaving the UFC, again, the best decision she has ever made. One, do you believe her? And two, can she survive without fighting?
Of course she can, John.
I mean, in the way she is now.
Yeah. She definitely can. She's making, I mean, she said it through her own volition. She's kind of iterated that. I mean, she makes more money not fighting than she does fighting. So yeah, I definitely believe her in this one, to make it a quick one for the gram. I mean, you could throw this one in a story if you want. Yeah, I actually do believe her in this one. And that BKFC card looks straight up wonky weird. I don't know any of the people on that card. Barely anybody on that card.
Except for her, right?
Well, the BKFC 18 was stacked. Like, they had big, big names on that one. And there was, like, umpteen different fights. But on this one, it's like a skinny string bean like me is fighting a potato sack.
Yeah, you know, I think that she, I'm with you. I think that she's able to market herself outside. She's got Dancing with Stars. She's got some other things.
How long ago was Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, but I mean, she was on it, so she has some name recognition from that.
So was Carol Baskins.
That's fair. I think that she, let me ask a question. Do you think that having her and only her on a card will get that card bought?
Well, I didn't buy it the last time, but I kind of wish I did because Bretton Hart told us all that she was a feeling. So, I mean, listen, I'm definitely going to buy the next Bretton Hart card, but I don't know, man. I mean, there's definitely a fan out there, and there's probably somebody out there, and let us know too. Like, be honest with us and with yourself, but there's probably somebody watching your early stoppage right now that might take offense that we don't like, or I don't like bare knuckle boxing. Again, I've talked about this so much. It's like, there was a comment out there the other day. We didn't pick Irene Aldana to beat Yana Kunitskaya. So whatever happens, happens in that fight. But somebody said, you didn't pick the latest UFC Mexican champion to win. So I don't trust anything that you guys say. Look at us. Who would have thought, John? I mean, we're to the point now where people just totally disregard that for 3 years, I kind of banged that drum that Brandon Moreno would become a champ. So it doesn't matter what I say, but the point of it is, you know, I used to be super into bare knuckle. I did a special years past on it, had a lot of fighters in it. You can't find it anymore because the website sold and they completely wiped everything they had on there. But the point of it is, I'm not into it. Somebody else might be out there. So for somebody, you know, Rachel Ostovich, Paige Van Zandt fight might make their summer. But to me, they're not getting my money, and that's 100% honesty right there.
And we move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, Stephen A. Smith is on the UFC 264 broadcast. Relax, folks. Not on the commentary team. He's probably on the desk. Smart move by the UFC / ESPN or not?
When I read this in the show notes, I was surprised that you didn't put that Max Kellerman was there too.
Is he?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I saw it on Reddit that they were both going to be there.
I don't know. That's news to me.
The reaction I saw to this was a little bit mixed, just based on what we've seen from Stephen A. I bet you they have him in, like, the pay-per-view opener with Joe Rogan and, you know, and John Anik. They'll probably try and sell a little bit more that way. But I don't know. I mean, ESPN's kind of gone a weird way with this stuff lately. I know Daniel Cormier's got a show with, is it Ryan Clark? Am I right there? Is that who it is?
That's news to me, man. Where have I been?
Yeah, I don't know. Man. You're not in your Kandahar bunker this week, so I really don't know. But
I've been at the water park, I guess, man. I got the water in my ears.
Ryan Clark's got a show with DC. There's two new shows with ESPN right now. So that, and that's just one of them. And fans were fairly receptive to it, you know. Like, they said, let's give this a chance. And I was really surprised. I was blown away because it's an NFL guy and a UFC guy. Then once the first episode came out, fans were kind of like, you know what? He kind of knows the stuff. I actually like this Ryan Clark, and they gel well together. So for Stephen A and for Max Kellerman, let's see how UFC fans are, because on Reddit, I was surprised how receptive they were to the new show. So I guess it just remains to be seen. We'll kind of have to dissect this one after the fact.
Yeah, I think that Stephen A is, you know, I mean, if he took a lesson, sometimes you learn lessons and you kind of can surpass even the teacher in learning it and take what they gave you and do more with it. And I think that Stephen A has a little bit of Skip Bayless, that he knows it's okay to be hated. And I think that he became so popular being like the anti-Skip that now it's almost, it's going to sound weird, man, but it's almost like you need to find an audience to hate you and you need to figure out a way to be put out. Granted, there are probably people in the comments that would say, there are plenty of people, John, that hate Stephen A. Smith. He doesn't need any more people to hate him. I think he has an interest in this world. I think that one thing that Stephen A. Smith brings to the table is that he is a big enough star that when he sits down with people, like he interviewed Connor, when he sits down with people, he has an expectation, and the media landscape has an expectation, that he's going to ask Connor a question that an MMA journalist doesn't have the balls to ask Connor. Even the biggest MMA journalist, right? So Stephen A. Smith could ask Conor McGregor about snorting coke. Errol Hawani's not going to ask that question. And Errol Hawani's the biggest
the
guy.
The new Errol might.
He might. But Stephen A. would and not lose a wink of sleep. He's going to be on. He can completely offend Conor and still be on First Take Monday morning. Like, Stephen A.'s got nothing to lose. It's all house money when he's doing UFC stuff. So I think that makes it interesting, right? And listen, there is a history of this. Okay, Howard Cosell used to do boxing. And I think that now people are looking for a guy like that, right? They're looking for the next Howard Cosell, the next Bob Costas, the guy that can do a couple of different things and show up on different stuff. And I think that I honestly think they have that in Stephen A. and Max, because I like Max. The problem is they're putting them together. And now one has to be the foil and one has to be – so just having them together, one's going to look smarter than the other.
I like Stephen A. more, but
– yeah, but so here's the deal. I think that they're trying to turn Stephen A. into a modern Howard Cosell. This is the UFC connection.
I'm really surprised because it took me a second to think of it, and then I Googled it. So DC and RC debuted on Thursday.
Is that what it's called? So, I knew it. I knew so they would today, call it that, DC and RC. Oh, Christ.
I'm surprised that you didn't know the other show that they debuted. It's called The Chael Sonnen Show with Jorge, is it Sedano?
Yeah.
Yeah, on ESPN. Yep. It's a new show.
Okay, so before we move on to posting the book, here's the question. Do you think those two shows are a fuck you to Errol Hawani?
No, it's we've got airtime that we have to fill, so these are the new shows.
Yeah.
And they seem to happen pretty quick.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on to posting the book. Craig, let's keep it simple. Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler 2 is in talks. Your thoughts. One, do you think we'll ever see it? Two, are you interested in it?
Robbie Lawler's last win was over Donald Cerrone 3 years and 11 months ago. Nick Diaz's last win was over BJ Penn 9 years and 8 months ago.
Matched up.
I don't give a rat's ass about this. Fuck it. Winner I really gets don't Usman. Care. Winner gets I Usman. Love... absolutely love Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
But he did not look good against Colby Covington, and he looked that much worse against Neil Magny. He looked like a fish out of water against Neil Magny that had never fought before. What the hell is Nick Diaz going to look like? Like, I don't know. I'm going to have to jazz myself up for this one. I do not know. I have nothing on this. It's upsetting.
Yeah, listen, I come from, you know, I have a history of being okay with fights when the fighters were properly matched, right? No matter how old they are,
this
no matter
is
how
that.
Long it's been. Yeah. So, I mean, if it looks cool on a poster. These guys are going to have a hell of a press conference. You know, people love Nick. People love Robbie. It's safe to say the guys that like Nick are not the same as the guys that like Robbie. We'll leave it at that. So it makes for an interesting dynamic, you know. If you need me to spell it, I'm not gonna spell it out. It's not gonna do it.
Don't be scared, homie.
So yeah, I just think that, you know, they both have their own fan bases that like them for different reasons. And I think it could be a good fight. All right, Craig, let's move on to start the conversation. This one's interesting. I saw this week that Khabib Nurmagomedov said that his retirement released him from a prison in a way. Anderson Silva said something similar when he lost to Chris Weidman. George St. Pierre has very famously wrestled with the demands of being a champion. So we're starting the conversation this week. Hi, Reddit. Haven't talked to you in a while. Do you think in this new world we live in, the Jake Pauls, the Conor McGregors of it all, Jorge Masvidal, do you think being a champion should really be a fighter's goal? Or do you think that just attaining that status where you're carrying a fight night or you're the co-main of a pay-per-view because you don't have the belt, like, is it better to be Jorge Masvidal or Kamaru Usman is ultimately the question. What do you think about that?
I mean, it definitely depends on the person, right? Like it's a cheap cop out of an answer, but it definitely depends on the person. I mean, you know, if you're somebody like a Jorge Masvidal, you fight a Bellator 1, you fight Toby Amada, then you end up in the UFC, you fight Donald Cerrone, you go away for years, you knock out Ben Askren, you knock out Darren Till. Yeah, he won the BMF belt. Yeah, he fought for the UFC title twice. What's his end goal? I don't know Jorge very well. I've never met him, but it's difficult when you look at a fighter like that versus a guy like an Nate Diaz that, you know, continues to kind of scrounge out there. He has really tricky fights. He kind of pops up like The Undertaker, takes a weird fight against Leon Edwards, where he almost won at the end. So it's different for everybody, but those are the upper echelon fighters. Then we talk about, you know, like a Michael Venom Page. What the hell's his goal? I mean, he's fought some names, like his Derek Anderson win his last time out, where he's kind of bumped his nose in like Roger Huerta. That's crazy. That's great. His Evangelista Dos Santos knockout where he bashes in his forehead. That's crazy. What's Michael Venom Page's goal? Is it really a title? I mean, he fought Douglas Lima. That was a good fight in the welterweight tournament, but he lost. So for a guy like that, maybe it is money. Maybe it's the martial artist type of path that he wants to go on. It really is difficult when it comes down to it at the end of the day. But the real question, do you think in the new world that we live in, is it being a champion? I think it really just depends on your background, what you personally want to accomplish with your goals. If it was me, and listen, I've thought about this before, John, I think about this all the time. If I took a fight, I would take my first fight probably in Canada, because if I get hurt, then I can fall back on the fact that I'm not going to have to pay if I have to get surgery or if I get concussed, like I'm going to be all right that way. But I think about it all the time. If I took a fight, and I still want to be an amateur at this point, I want one fight in the States. I'd come out with the biggest Canadian flag you've ever seen. I'd wear head-to-toe jeans. I'd do the Canadian tuxedo, cowboy hat, probably Pit Vipers. And I would walk out to, like, I don't know, My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. Like, I'd have, like, a Tai Tuivasa type walkout, but it'd be a Canadian song. And then I just go absolutely balls to the wall. But my end goal through all of it, notoriety, name recognition, and sponsorships. So for me, that would be my personal goal, not the glory of a title, but it all depends on the person.
That's quite a thing. You really have put some thought into this. It's
very auspicious goals.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I've thought about this too, and I won't give you the full details, but the long and the short of it is I would 100% take a fight against the guy I used to do a podcast with.
Just
so we're clear, I would take that.
I know exactly who that is.
And guess what? I'd fight him in his hometown. That's how much of a maniac I am.
I think he's had some fights before, though.
He has, and that matters very little to me. Okay, so listen, but on this subject, I will say this. There was a time when you used to say, the golden rule is he who has the gold makes the rules. Here's the problem with that. There's an interim title shot or an interim heavyweight title fight happening between Ciryl Gane and Derek Lewis. We have a newly crowned champion that's about, what, 3-4 months removed from winning the belt. So he who has the gold doesn't make the rules anymore. He who doesn't have the gold doesn't make the rules. He who has a bald head might or may not be on PEDs, allegedly, might or may not, you know, have a history with some ring card girls, ask Brendan Schaub. Yeah, I think he's making the rules. And I think that once you understand that, you have to understand who you are. It used to be you win the belt, you take some time off, you get surgery. You know, we've talked about this before. You go on your run, you win the belt, you take some time off. Nowadays, it's just you got to be ready to just defend that thing. And if the UFC wants to serve them up, you want to crack them back over the net. So I think that at this point, it's dependent on the type of a fighter you are. And if you can't independently market yourself and you're someone like Khabib, who does have a following but cannot sort of write his own checks necessarily, I can imagine the belt would be a prison for you. Kamaru Usman, guys that are struggling to make it to that next level, guys that have no problem are Brock Lesnar, George St. Pierre. You can make an argument for Anderson Silva, John Jones. I mean, could these guys be outperforming their numbers pay-per-view wise now? Yeah. I mean, Anderson Silva could have definitely drawn more pay-per-views if he had done X, Y, and Z. John Jones could draw more pay-per-views if he does X, Y, and Z. So they're not perfect, but they're at least completed who they – like, they are who they are. You know, some of the things they do, they're polarizing figures. Some people love them for what they do. Some people love the fact that Anderson, you know, pulls shit in the cage, loves that John Jones is arrogant. Some people hate it. So although they're not Connor, they have their thing, right? There are other guys who just don't have a thing. Kamaru Usman, who I think is the right PR company, could do a lot with Kamaru Usman. It's just all the pieces haven't fit together yet. So if you're him, yeah, the belt's going to become a prison for you because you need to keep it to remain relevant. Look at Tyrone Woodley, we talked about earlier. Once he lost the belt, Dana didn't give a shit what he did. He could care less. He was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. You want to go fight Jake Paul, knock stuff out. You know, I mean, he blocked George St. Pierre fighting Oscar De La Hoya with every goddamn thing he had. But Tyrone Woodley wants to fight Jake Paul. Yeah, who cares? And guess what? Tyrone Woodley versus Jake Paul, I don't know if it's going to be a bigger fight than De La Hoya versus GSP would be, but it's going to be a big fight. I mean, that's going to do some numbers. So, yeah, I think that it depends on who you are as to whether or not you're ultimately going to be a slave to that belt.
Still don't have my Mayweather-Paul shirt, if anybody's wondering. Still haven't seen it.
Put on your Amazon wish list. Maybe some, you know, weird sugar daddy can send it to you. All right, we move on to finish strong. I'm going to skip the history lesson because of Rankum. Do you got anything stick out to you? There's a couple of things we didn't hit.
You know, for me, when I talk about finish strong, I kind of look more so at Big Marcel's Instagram page. You can go to his Twitter. I like his Instagram. It's fairly good. But I already mentioned it. I mean, Perez has got a big fight coming up against Matt Schnell. Kevin Holland's going to be fighting one of the Dawkus brothers. He's got Kyle. There was a good interview with Kyle before his last fight on our channel. Vinajan Di Roba. Now, I listened to Drake Riggs' interview with her. Hopefully, I was close. I've done it the John Anik way, Janji Doba. But I think there's actually like a roll of an R in there. That's a fight. Carlos Felipe fighting Andre Arlovsky. Edson Barboza, Giga Chikadze. There's some good ones in there. My guy D. Silva is fighting Gaetano Pirello, which is a weird one. Any of these ones sticking out to you? Mark Giacchese is fighting Rafael Alves.
Nothing. I'm you know, losing sleep over.
Barboza, Chikadze? You're not excited about
that? No, that's a good fight. I didn't hear you say that one. That's a good fight.
Diana Balbizia, Hannah Goldie.
I'll get out of here with...
Canadian?
We'll get out of here with this one for you. What about this Sarah Alpar stuff? The GoFundMe, Jake Paul making a donation. What are your thoughts on all that?
Hopefully it changes some people's tunes. I've seen a lot of people really negative about it. It actually upsets me. You know, if you're Sarah Alpar, I think we touched on this in the last episode, just briefly, because it was really fresh news before he came on. But I shared this around. I saw Trent Rinesmith share it. I shared it too. And I think I commented under it. And listen, people are negative to Trent on social media. I actually think he's one of those necessary evil, like, checks and balances. Maybe sometimes he stirs the pot a little bit, but I actually do kind of like following his stuff on Twitter. So props to Trent Rinesmith. But that's kind of what got me on this whole kick because, yeah, if you're Sarah Alpar, you had success outside of the UFC. You come in, you get beat badly by Jessica Rose Clark. Illegal knee. Do we need replay? It's unfortunate when somebody fights for the biggest promotion in the world and they can't pay their way to get to the event for the next fight, or they have a hard time getting the right nutrition, or they have the hard time getting the right training. And people make that argument, oh, well, just move to Vegas. And I think you and I, we have talked about this before. Oh, just go to Vegas. Just go to Vegas. It should be that easy. Okay, if it's that easy, then why don't more fighters do it?
Yeah.
You're behind the screen. You're watching this. You're in your car. You're listening to this. You're on an airplane. Why don't you try something like that? If your job said, okay, you know, you're going to get the best life in the world. We're going to make this so easy for you. All you have to do is win fights and we'll provide everything for you. Move to Vegas. How easy is that for you? Logistically, how much sense does that really make to you?
Yeah. And listen, not for nothing. There are people who have good jobs. Right. You know, I'm a teacher. Right. I'm not saying it's a money making job, but it's the, you know, but I mean, I could get a job teaching in Vegas. You can't uproot your family and go to Vegas just because there's an availability of something doesn't mean that it makes sense for your life. And I think that, you know, I'm with you there. I just think that, you know, I'm interested to see how I do think the next step would be the UFC making dorms and living facilities for fighters there. That might change things. If fighters knew they could move there and get settled living in the UFC on the UFC campus and then maybe branching out and going to get their own place.
Like universities do it where, you know, you have all your different residences. Like I know university I went to, there was no sort of university affiliated sororities or whatever. What's the male version called?
Fraternity.
That's it. Okay. See, didn't have one. Don't pay attention to them. Don't know what any of the symbols mean other than their mathematical equivalencies. But to me, you had all of those on campus. And then there was a couple of them that were still considered on campus. They were just off a little bit where it was almost like a adult living type apartment situation while it was still under the university. So if you were an adult learner, if you were an international student that had a family with you, you could live there. If the UFC had something like that, maybe, you know, you get something for the single fighters. And then if it's Craig Allen with his wife and his kids, then you can live there. And the UFC still has kind of a handle on it. And they're subsidizing it somehow. I think maybe that's the play. Because it works quite well for universities that way. So, you know, not like the UFC is a university, but they have the Ultimate Fighter and Dana White's Contender Series. So why couldn't you play something like that? I'm sure it's one of those things that, is it cost effective? I don't really know. But if you have fighters more incentivized to move there and there's an increase in performance, then why wouldn't you take a look at it?
Listen, I'm a veteran, so a lot of the answers that I have for life come through the military, but I was stationed in Korea. If you go to any base, right, where people have to go that are not going to be there forever, there's living quarters, and the living quarters are based on your rank. So when I went to Korea, I was a low-ranked person. I had a roommate. But like if you were like a master sergeant or a chief master sergeant or whatever, an officer, there were different dorms for you. Nicer rooms, bigger, you know, suites, kitchen suites, stuff like that. I think the UFC should do something like that. I mean, if you have a family, you know, the UFC is not short on cash. It's not like they're going to, you know, you put 200 rooms in this thing. Or, you know, the reality of it is, you know, we talked about the what would be problematic is like if they had a UFC hotel, right? If they built one of these Vegas looking hotels, put it next to the performance center and house the fighters there, that's tricky. I mean, you could do it, but it'd be a lot more money going out than money coming in. Now the question is, okay, well, do you let fans stay there? What problems does that create? Maybe you put like the fighters on floors, you know, 10, 11, and 12, and the fans are on 1 through 9. Who knows? But there's a way to do it. So, all right, Craig. I think we've started the conversation effectively. We finished strong effectively. That does it for this episode of Early Stoppage. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen F&P. I can be followed as a cornerman. The fight's been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, I want you to say something witty, but I'm going to give you the thing to say. Because I need you to do this for me. I need you to tell me that I can be your wingman anytime.
John, you can be my wingman anytime.
Bullshit. You can be mine. See you next week. Peace.